Welcome to the FBD Holdings PLC half-year results and announcement of joint venture conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we shall conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, Carlo Crisp. Sir, you may begin. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the FBD conference call. Let me see, in the room here, we have a group of analysts, and we also have some people listening on the telephone. Just so as to get the sequence right, Andrew and I are going to make the presentation first. If you don't mind, we'll try and make the presentation through and then take questions and answers at the end. To make things simple, what we're going to suggest is that at the end, we ask questions of the people here in the room with us first, and then, having completed those questions, that we will open it up to everybody on the telephone system. Andrew, would you like to start off?
Absolutely, yeah. I'd like to welcome you all to the presentation of our 2011 half-year results and also the announcement of our proposed joint venture transaction. Page two gives some information in terms of forward-looking statements of the presentation that we are about to make contains, and I'm sure you're all familiar with that setup. If I can bring you straight away to page three, our interim results had initially been scheduled for next week, but we have brought them forward as we reached agreement yesterday on our joint venture agreement, and we wanted to announce the two together. As a consequence, today we are announcing, firstly, excellent results for the first 6 months of the year, but secondly, we have taken a significant strategic step. Page three gives the highlights of both, and I am going to talk about the highlights of the half-year first on an overview level, and then I will speak about the Property and Leisure joint venture in some detail before coming back to the results in a little bit more detail. We are very pleased with the results for the first 6 months. We saw our operating profit rise to 28.7 million, an increase of 154%. The primary driver of that being that our combined operating ratio has improved from 105.2% for the first half of 2010 to 92.8%. The main contributor to this is an improvement in our loss ratio to 68.9%. This delivers an operating EPS of 0.757. And at a below-the-line level, our profit before tax has turned around by 28.4 million from a loss last year of 8 million to a profit of 20 million. Our balance sheet at the year-end is very strong, and at the period-end is very strong, has strengthened further, and it is very conservatively positioned, which at this time we believe is quite important, and we'll bring it through the balance sheet in a little bit more detail later. The solvency level in our core insurance business has improved to 60.4% of net earned premium, and at the half year last year that was in the region of 54.5%. And we have increased, on the back of our results, we've increased our interim dividend by 7.1% to 0.1125 per share. As a result of our balance sheet strengthening, our net asset value has increased to 582 cents per share, which is an increase of 6 or 7%. And we are very pleased with that outcome. We are planning to build on our progress in the first half, and as a result, we have increased the guidance for the full year operating earnings per share to between 145 cents to 155 cents per share. And we will come back to the results in a little bit later in the presentation. But firstly, we'd like to talk about the Property and Leisure joint venture agreement on which was reached last evening. Firstly, to give a summary of the proposed joint venture, as I said, we have reached conditional agreement with Farmer Business Development, who are a 29% holder of our voting rights, and as a result, it's deemed to be a related party transaction. The rationale behind the transaction is to allow us and others focus on our core underwriting business. It's to reduce any exposure to property valuation fluctuations. It is to ensure that our operating profit in the future will only reflect our core underwriting business. It also has the benefit of reducing the debt on the balance sheet of FBD, and it reduces the guarantees given by the FBD group over debt. It also, importantly, enhances the ability of FBD Property and Leisure to realize value over time. And just for the sake of clarity, by FBD property and leisure, we mean it's a combination of La Cala Resort in the south of Spain, Sunset Beach Club, and FBD Hotels, which is our division of four Irish hotels. So that is what comprises the FBD Property and Leisure Group. And the structure that division has now been placed in and that the joint venture will take place ensures that it is or enhances the ability of the division to really realise value over time. From a financial in the short term, the transaction enhances our EPS and results in a small increase in our net asset value per share. So, on slide 5, if we can move to slide 5, and if we can detail the reasons for the transaction. Since 2010, the board of FBD have carried out a strategic review of our property and leisure interests, and this review resulted in a decision for FBD to focus more fully on its core insurance underwriting business and to separate the assets of FBD Property and Leisure into a joint venture with Farmer Business Development. The reason behind the transactions, as I've already articulated, is we will be able to focus on our core insurance business. It reduces our exposure to valuation fluctuations, especially in the short term. Our operating profit in the future no longer includes the results of the property and leisure activities and only includes our core insurance business. The debt on the group balance sheet will be reduced, and the guarantees of the debt and property and leisure will also be reduced, and we'll bring you through some of those figures in a moment. The new funding structure will enhance the ability of property and leisure to realise value over time, and a consequence of the transaction is the downside risk for FBD Group is reduced if property values are significantly weaker in the future, and in return, if property values strengthen in the future, the upside for FBD Group is foregone. Some of the upside will be foregone. Also, any potential disposal of these assets in the future will not be influenced by short-term factors, which allows time for the property and banking markets to recover. On slide 7, on slide 6, we look at the current position of property and leisure. So what does the current balance sheet of FBD and property and leisure look like? And currently this is consolidated into the FBD Group balance sheet. On the asset side of the FBD property and leisure balance sheet, we can see that the hotel and golf resort assets are valued by external valuers at the 30th of June at 120 million, and together with inventory, which is held at the lower of cost and net realisable value, and cash and working capital, the assets amount to 180 million. That is currently financed by bank debt of 57 million, by a loan from Farmer Business Development of 60 million euros, which is guaranteed by FBD Group, an intercompany loan of 63 million from FBD Group. FBD Holdings, and we can see on the right hand side of that slide, we can see what the current position is in graphic format. So what will the impact of the transaction be on the balance sheet of FBD Property and Leisure? And we can see that on slide 7, and we can see that the effect of the transaction will be to convert the loan of Farmer Business Development, the 52.5 million of the loan of Farmer Business Development, it will be to reduce it to 7 million and to convert it 52.5 million of it into convertible loan notes, and also the intercompany loan from FBD Holdings will be replaced with similar but subordinated convertible loan notes. So in total, 123 million of the short-term debt facilities will be replaced with longer-term funding, and also the guarantees given by the FBD Group reduced from 93 million to 40 million. To move to slide 8 then, we show the impact that has on the FBD consolidated balance sheet. I'm going to pass over to Cathal O'Queeve, who's going to bring in through that.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay, let me see. What we're looking at here is an actual and then a pro forma balance sheet to say what would the balance sheet have looked like at the 30th of June if this transaction had gone through. Okay, and so you can see, if you like, in the yellow highlighted, the items that have been taken out of the balance sheet. And the major ones that I mentioned them are the hotel and golf resort assets are in the balance sheet of 120. That will be gone in the future. And then the inventory of 41. Okay, likewise. And on the liability side, the debt of 117 million. So you remember that FBD's balance sheet, consolidated balance sheet, has always had 117 million worth of debt. It shall no longer have any debt. Okay, so there are the three major movements.
okay? And we will be accounting for property and leisure as a joint venture, okay? As under equity accounting, which means that we will have a single line on the balance sheet which will say share of assets of joint venture, and you can see that item coming in on the asset side there at 46 million. So effectively, gone are the individual items in the balance sheet, and instead it's replaced by a single line. Likewise, in the P&L, we will no longer have their turnover, property and leisure turnover, and the turnover figure, and their expenses and the expenses figure. We will have a single line down the bottom of the profit and loss account underneath operating profit, which would say share of results of joint venture. Okay, so at the moment, property and leisure is included in the consolidated balance sheet at 43 million. Okay, post the transaction, it will be included in the balance sheet at 46 million. Okay, that means there's a gain of 3 million euro, which is around 9 cents a share. So when we look at the interim results and they talk about 582, that 582 net asset value will effectively increase by 9 cents when this transaction is complete. Okay, in total, the joint venture will represent about 4% of the total assets of the company. Okay, and in addition to that, the transaction will be EPS enhancing on both a basic and a diluted basis. Okay, so if you like, the bottom line of the profit and loss account for property and leisure, including interest after interest payments, is negative. Okay, and therefore, the exclusion of it will result in an improvement in EPS. However, just to take one step back on that, and let's say in terms of operating profit, the impact on operating profit in 2011 will be positive, so operating EPS will be enhanced. But I can't say the same in relation to 2012 or thereafter, because presumably we were expecting that business to produce an operating profit going forward. Okay. Now, before I go to the next slide, there's only one other thing I want to take out of this. We've told you on many, many occasions when we've done these presentations that the development land in Lakala was in a cost. And one of the important things as we moved through this transaction was to make sure that 22 million, and I think the figure you might have from your notes last year would have been 24 million, which it was on the 31st of December. But we got all our premises revalued at the 30th of June. And so the 30th of June valuation of that is 22 million over cost. Okay, so that 22 million, we want to make sure in this transaction. Okay, so if we look at the net asset stock of 43 million, in our books of 43 million, and we add that 22 on, and then we add back the debt that the new venture will have, the net debt that the new venture will have, the magic number we come up with is 120 million. So what it says is the existing valuation of this business, the gross assets of this business, or the assets excluding debt before we took off debt, or no, before we took off these ICOs and the shareholder funds, is 120 million. And if we go to the next slide, you'll see we've got this chart. Okay, and the chart essentially shows the split of the equity between FBD and Farmer Business Development, okay, at different levels of valuations. And the core starting point is the current 120 million. Okay, so if you like, they're in our books, and if I add the uplift, it's 120 million. Okay, and essentially what's going to happen is, if the property valuations are in the range of 120 million or 20 million below that, in other words, down to 100 million, then the split of the equity, the split of the stakes, the equity in the property and leisure, post conversion in 5 to 10 years time, will be 50-50. On the other hand, let's say property values were to continue to collapse altogether and go all the way down from 120 million to 55 million, then the percentage split, 75% Farmer Business Development, 25% FPD. Okay? And likewise, on the upside, if, for example, we say the valuation were to increase from 120 million to 150 million, then our holding would reduce to 48%. In other words, we've had to provide FPD with some of the upside so as to compensate them for taking some of the downside, if that makes sense. And that's how that will be the end result. Okay?
To provide development.
As I say, FPD, I meant development, yeah?
The other important thing in that is that the development stake is in any case capped at 75%. Okay, there are limited circumstances in which we can opt to provide more than 75% in the event that all of the that there is any interest outstanding. But other than that, that one is within our control. Other than that, the maximum is 75. On slide 10, what we've tried to do is to compare the current position, if you like, before the deal, with the position after the deal. Okay? And the blue line looks at what would happen if what would this impact on FBD's profit and loss account in the event that we were to sell, okay, or to convert or have an exit event at different valuations. And again, if the starting point is 120 million, at 120 million current values, okay, we would expect that the impact on FBD's account would be that we would have the gain of the uplift of the 22 million that isn't included in our account. So if we were to sell it all today at that value, it would have a gain of that, okay? And you can see the blue line would show that if we were to go all the way down to a negative value, you could have a loss of 100 million, and if it was all the way up to 230. So you can see that is the profit or loss that would have been incurred at different valuations. Now, under the deal shows the red line as the joint venture, and effectively what's happening is you can see that we have reduced our downside very significantly, but of course in turn we've had to give a share of the upside over to development. Okay. Now I'll pass back to Andrew.
Sure. So just to conclude on the proposed transaction, does it achieve all the objectives that we set out to achieve when we carried out our strategic review? And we believe it does, because firstly, and most importantly, FBD is going to be able now to focus on our core insurance underwriting business, and our operating profit for the group in the future will only reflect that business. Any potential shareholder exposure to property valuations will be reduced in the future. The group debt and guarantees reduced by 52.5 million, and also working with Farmer Business Development in the future, we believe that it has enhanced the ability of the quality businesses that are contained within FBD Property and Leisure that have outperformed in good times and in bad, have outperformed their peers and will continue to do so, and we believe that their ability to realise value over time has been enhanced. So, on page 12, you can see that as a result of that, the board recommendation is that the board, having been advised, considers the transaction to be fair and reasonable, to deliver value, and is in the best interest of all the shareholders of FBD, and as a result, the board unanimously recommends the shareholders vote in favour of the resolution. The proposed transaction is subject to approval by our shareholders because of the fact that Farmer Business Development, with over 29% of our voting rights, is a related party. So now, if you go back to page 13, I'd like to focus once again on our first half results. We've already spoken about the highlights and we've taken through them, and as I said at the outset, these are a set of results that we are very happy with and that we believe they're excellent results. And now if you move to page 14, we take you through the results in some more detail. On page 14, what we're trying to do here is to put the performance the performance of FBD into a market context. And as I'm sure certainly everyone in this room is fully aware, the last number of years have been challenging from an economic point of view. And obviously, domestic demand and the growth or contraction in domestic demand is a primary driver in terms of insurance volumes. And we give the figures there for the last 3 years and what we expect the figure for 2011 to be. But if there's a graphic on the top right-hand side of slide 14 which reflects that very accurately, and it shows that the retail sales of automotive fuel since 2005, and particularly if you look at it since the beginning of 2008, you can see that it's fallen by almost 30%, and that is a very good reflection of economic activity. We do see that contraction continuing, and we see it in our business in terms of insurable values every day, but we do believe that that is reducing, and there is potential for positive GNP and GDP next year, which may translate into a marginal growth in domestic demand. Then in terms of the insurance industry, it obviously does not rely totally on volumes, and premium rates in the industry in the last 6 months or so have continued to harden. As against that, because of the economic decline, the volumes and values have reduced, but we do believe that the pace of that decline is reducing, particularly in motor. Claims frequency, on the other hand, is improving, and there's a graphic on the right-hand side which shows the continuing improvement in road fatalities, which is a good indicator of frequency of cars accidents, and you can see that has improved for a number of reasons, partly to do with a reduction in economic activity, partly to do with road safety. And claims frequency for the industry is certainly improving, and I guess that is where there is a little bit of a dichotomy between the economic cycle and the insurance cycle. There is no doubt that, and especially with the developments over recent weeks, the long-term investment returns in the insurance industry are likely to remain lower for longer than originally anticipated. And what this means, and we are very comfortable with this, this means that the need for underwriting discipline and proper premium pricing is going to be required. So in summary, the insurance market, we believe, the contraction in volumes is going to more than compensate for the increases in rates. So the insurance market will continue to contract, but that contraction, as we go on, is going to be at a slower pace. To move on to slide 15 and just to talk about our own premium and how that's evolved over the period. At a top line level, our gross written premium has reduced by 3.1%, and we believe that that is probably in line or slightly ahead of the market. And that is reflective of how SPD has over time, and that there is a slide in the back of our presentation in an appendix on slide 33 that you can look at in your own time, but that is reflective of the fact that we have historically outperformed the market in terms of growth, but managed to do it on a profitable basis as well. On an actual income line, our net earned premium is flat, and that's a result of the fact that we have chosen to take more risk and retain more premium on property insurance. Very encouragingly, our policy volume has been maintained, and there's a graphic on the bottom right-hand side of that page, and you can see that is the first time that our policy volume has increased in 3.5 years. And that is a reflection of the fact that pricing in the marketplace has recovered to a level where we believe it is prudent to grow volumes again. We are very pleased to have benefited from the relative strength of the agri sector in what has been very difficult times. Generally, economically, the agri sector is outperforming. And this is an area we continue to work hard on, and we generate 45% of our business from, so that places us, we believe, at an advantage to some others. As I said earlier, the reductions in cover and mix have offset the positive impact of rate increases and of our maintenance or slight increase of volume. And in terms of competition, and this is fed into the mix, the competition for business insurance, especially business insurance at the higher risk side end, has remained very intense, and motor insurance, by virtue of increased advertising, has also been very intense. Despite that, we have improved, due to our level of customer service, we've improved our retention rates and our retention rates on existing business and conversion rates on new business. And one of the results of the fact that business insurance has been so competitive has meant that our mix has changed slightly, because we have foregone large risks where we believe the pricing is just uncompetitive, and those large risks have been replaced by motor insurance risks. So in summary, the volumes have stabilised, but we have done that while also maintaining our underwriting discipline, which is very important to us. On slide 16, we just give a brief snapshot of how we have performed in various sectors of our business. And as I said earlier, the farm book remains our number one priority, and it's an area that we work incredibly hard at to make sure that we are delivering our customers a level of service that no one else can. And despite our prevailing dominance in that market already, we have, in the first 6 months of the year, managed to grow the number of farms we have insured. And our local office network around the country is focused on winning back any aspects of farm accounts that we've lost over the last number of years. Our Dublin market penetration, which is an area which gives us significant opportunity, has continued to grow, and now, from a figure of 1 or 2% a number of years ago, 14% of our gross written premium comes from the Dublin area, and we believe our market share there is around 5%. On business insurance, as I said already, the competition for larger risks has been intense, and it is here in this area where you see the reduction in values most prevalent. As consumers spend less money, businesses' turnover reduces, and as a result they possibly employ less staff, and they pay them less, so the liability values in particular have been written down over the last number of years quite significantly. But again, in this area, and this is an area where we have huge potential for growth, and we've done a lot of work in terms of business, in terms of relationships with external brokers, but we will only grow this business where it is appropriate to do so and where the pricing is right. On the car and home side, for customers not connected to farming or business, we have made strides in terms of our internet penetration, and our no-nonsense product has a product count increasing by 75% in the first half of last year. And also for customers who are not connected to farming or business, we have, from almost a standing start, moved 30% of those customers to renew online, which is convenient for the customer and obviously has cost benefits for us as well. So that is a summary of how our development in the first half has been at a premium level, and I'm going to pass you on to Cathal now, who's going to talk about costs in terms of claims and expenses.
Okay, on slide 17 looks at the claims trend. The most significant reason for the improvement in trading between half one last year and half one this year comes down to the loss ratio, which improved from 83% last year to 69% this year. Now, as always, weather is a factor in this. Because weather in half one 2010, there was significant weather events which cost us a net of 12 million net of the insurance. On the other hand, this year, weather only cost 2.5 million net of reinsurance. Therefore, there is a significant element, if you like, that is related to that. But more importantly, there is other things going on. One of which is rate increases. Like the rate increases that we have put through in the last year clearly have a direct impact on the loss ratio. And also, frequency accidents have improved. And the frequency, if you like, on motor is fairly apparent. Andrew showed you a chart earlier on which shows consumption of motor fuel and the reduction in the number of fatalities from road accidents. And that has led to a direct reduction in accidental damage frequency and injury frequencies in motor. But interestingly, the same has happened in terms of, we've also seen a frequency in terms of home insurance, excluding flood-related and snow-related, normal events at home, and we've seen a reduction in EL and PL. So across the board, in line with economic activities, or in some cases ahead of economic activities, frequency. Okay, and we're also looking at a reduction in average cost or severity, as it's referred to here in the chart. Okay, that relates more to internal factors rather than external factors, and we probably attribute it more specifically to the fact that we are settling claims earlier, and we are doing our utmost to settle claims directly with the insurer rather than the employer, so to avoid those things. Okay, and then the last factor that's happening in there is really risk selection. And if you like, our underwriting processes are trying to do their best to weed out the risks, or to be good at selecting the risks we do want, I suppose, okay? Trend in claims, it continues to be very good, and I think that, if you like, we continue to innovate and to use technology and various processes to improve the environment. Moving on to slide number 18, our cost structure. And our management expenses, I suppose, let me see, our expense ratio increased from 22.1 to 23.9. Now, more than 1% of that, the first piece of that, is due to reinsurance, okay? And effectively, we are retaining more of the property account. I think we described it previously. What we were trying to do with reinsurance was take more of the operational risk down the bottom, okay, and then pass out to reinsurers more of the catastrophic claims of risk up the top. So we've been trying to not necessarily spend less or more money on reinsurance, but restructure our reinsurance so to take more operational and less catastrophe risk. And as we've done that, what this means is that it paid off in the current year, where of course there are no catastrophes. So therefore, what it means from a P&L perspective is that what we have is we are retaining more. Our net earned premium, if you remember, is flat, whereas our gross written premium was down 3%. And then from a commission perspective, we are passing out less reinsurance,
we are ceding less business to reinsurers, we are receiving less commission, and that's having a 1% impact on the expense ratio. In addition to that, the market has become incredibly competitive in terms of advertising. Advertising in the Irish general insurance market is 40% up relative to this time last. Okay, and so we have increased our marketing spend. Okay, not in line with others, but we have increased our marketing spend so as to protect the share of noise. Okay, in addition to that, we've entered into a very significant and required agreement with our employees. Okay, based on a long and lengthy an agreeable negotiation process, and we've agreed a range of changes in terms of conditions and working practice. And they would relate to pay freezes, pay cuts, increase in the number of hours worked, and a whole variety of performance-related evaluations, etc. And the whole concept of those was to secure and enhance the cost competitiveness of the business, make sure we keep our competitive advantage, and of course, to enable us to achieve profitable growth in the future. Andrew?
Okay, just on slide 19, we're going to talk about our non-underwriting businesses for a moment. And in total, those businesses have delivered an improved contribution in 6 months in the year to date, and that's improved from 1.9 million overall to 2.2 million. As I said earlier, investment property and leisure businesses, and they have delivered an improved result and positive cash flow in the period. There are some very encouraging trends in the Irish hotel market, and particularly in Dublin. And our Dublin, the occupancy for Dublin hotels, the whole market has improved by almost 10% in the first half of the year, and the average rate in the Dublin market is up by 5.4% on top of that, and we have two hotels in Dublin, and their performance pretty much replicates that. Sunset Beach Club, which has been an absolute stellar performer over the last number of years, has continued that, and again, that is down to good management and making sure that it's meeting the needs of its customers and changing and evolving through that all the time, and has delivered another excellent performance in the first 6 months. And at La Cala, we have sold a further 17 units of apartments and townhouses in the first 6 months, and we're very pleased with that. Our financial services business, which includes FBD Brokers, which is a brokerage that is primarily caters to the agribusiness sector and places the general insurance risk of large agribusiness corporates, and FBD Financial Solutions, which is a life insurance broker which sells life insurance and protection products mainly to FBD insurance customers. They have both had a very good year, and they've maintained their contribution at the same level as 2010. So I'm going to pass back to Cathal now, and I spoke at the start about the way our balance sheet is positioned in these current turbulent times, and Cathal might bring down through the asset allocation for the insurance company and the group as a whole.
Okay, firstly in relation to the insurance company, 88% of the investment funds in the insurance company are either in German government bonds or in deposits of cash. We have no exposure to sovereign debts of the periphery countries whatsoever. Okay, that's the 88%. The other 12% is split between equities, investment properties, our own buildings and secured loans. That has been a reducing proportion, as you know, as we've cut back. And in the current year, we disposed of three UK investment properties at amounts just marginally above the valuations in the accounts. And the funds that we raised, I think it was 22 million, were invested in more liquid assets. Some of them in equities and others in deposits and cash. Okay, our intention is to increase equities. We stood back from it in the current market because of the turbulent position. We think that our balance sheet, if you like, is appropriately prudent. Okay, given the turbulent times that we're currently in. Okay. Looking at the slide 21, it looks at the group assets, and essentially it's the same bundle of assets, the addition of two new items, the hotel and golf resort assets of 120 and the inventories of 41, and both of those are items that I spoke about earlier on in the context of the joint venture proposal. The only interesting item to note at the moment is the reduction in inventories from 46 to 41, okay, which arises because of the sale of 17 units in Lacala during the period, which was very successful. And the other thing is that we've had all the group assets, property related assets throughout the group, valued by external independent valuers as of the 30th of June. None of the assets of the hotel and the property division reduced in value. There were ups and downs, but the overall valuation was static. And on the investment property side, we had one marginal reduction. We do have short-term fluctuations in the current period. The majority of it relates to FX and equity and losses on equity through to the 30th of June. Okay, we see that the potential, if you like, we've taken very significant write-offs off the property and leisure assets. We think the potential is reduced. I've introduced a new chart on slide 22. Firstly, to note that the capital base is strengthened, that our solvency is up from 60.4, or up to 60.4 from 54.9, and that we've maintained the level of prudence within our reserves. So I don't believe that there's any build-up or release of reserves in the numbers we're looking at here. The reserving ratio has reduced very marginally, and that is because the reserves at the 31st of December included provisions for floods that had happened the previous week. And those claims, of course, were paid out by the time we get to June. Okay? And the net asset value per share is 582. The two slides on the right there look at the net asset value over a lengthy period of time. The period we picked was December 06 to June 11, which is essentially peak. So the December 06 net asset value in our books was a peak at net asset value at €14.25 versus the current 582. And it's just interesting to see where it has come from, okay, and what has happened. In the interim period, we generated profits of €8.72, okay. We had that one-off change in reserving strategy of €3.21 in addition to that in 2006. Okay, but we then declared dividends of 232, special distributions of 824, okay, and then of course the valuation adjustments. And the reason I'm showing, and in addition to that, we also bought back shares in the market, by the way, about another 260 million, which would have been about another €8 per share. Okay, but the reason I'm showing all that is so to look at the trend in net asset value over a period. That net asset value has been coming down, was coming down, and you'll see that we hit the trough in June 2010, and we now have net asset value per share increasing. Finally, looking at interim dividends, we declared an interim dividend of 11.25 cents, which is marginally ahead of what the market was expecting. It's up 7.1% on the 2010 interim dividend. And of course, in framing this, we always take into account that it's in all shareholders' long-term interest, so to maintain strong solvency and good liquidity margin. Okay. And that our policy has been to have a progressive and sustainable dividend policy and always look at the current and future economic and macro environment. Okay? And in doing so, I suppose we have in our mind a dividend payout ratio, and this dividend is probably at the lower end of that ratio, and given the turbulent times, etc., in the market, we see that it's appropriate to be at the lower end but have progressive, sustainable growth. Okay?
Okay, thanks very much, Carl. I'm going to bring you now to our outlook for the rest of the year, which I guess is what people are probably most interested in. And as I said earlier, at an economic level, we believe that domestic demand for the rest of the year will decline further, although we do see the pace slowing down. We believe that the reduction in insurable risk resulting from that at an industry level will offset any further increases that the industry might put in. So I think that the overall insurance industry premium is likely to be smaller in 2011 than it was in 2010, and against that backdrop, the opportunity for us to grow is limited. However, we do have opportunities to grow, as I already spoke about, in terms of urban, personal lines, and in terms of business insurance, and we have very well-developed plans for those, but we will only take those opportunities if we believe the pricing in those key growth segments is right at the time. And we are certainly focused on doing that for the rest of the year, and if the opportunity arises, there is potential for us to grow there. We will continue to work on the claims initiatives that Cathal spoke about in terms of continuing to change our policy wording and conditions, and continuing to make sure that we're as efficient as possible so that we can build on the full year. So as a result of that, we expect that our underwriting business will deliver improved profitability for the full year. And again, I have to qualify by saying that that is barring any unforeseen weather events in the second half of the year. And for the last 2 years, we have had substantial weather events, but maybe for the decade or so before that, we didn't have any. As I said, our non-underwriting businesses have performed well in the first half, and both the property businesses and the financial services businesses will deliver, we believe, an increased contribution. And as a result of the combination of those factors, we have upgraded our guidance for operating EPS from 130 to 140 cents per share, which is where we saw things going in March, to 145 to 155 cents per share. So we are very pleased with the performance to date, and we're confident of the next number of months. And we're also very happy about how we're positioned to deliver growth in the long term. So just in summary on slide 25, I think what we've proved over the last number of years and the last 6 months has proved it very definitely is that our underwriting business, even in difficult conditions, is very robust. And I think the excellent results that we've delivered over the last 6 months have really underpinned that. And I think that in turn, that makes our rationale for deciding to focus on our core insurance business even stronger. As I said already, we have plans for growth and we have the proper structures, people and systems in place to do it. We have shown over the last number of years, and especially in the last 6 months, can grow profitably. Our capital base has further strengthened. Our reserving policy has remained as prudent as it was at the year end. And currently, the balance sheet that we have at this time, quite conservative, we believe it is very appropriate to the market conditions. In terms of our joint venture, as I said, we are very pleased to have reached conditional agreement, and we look forward to working closely with our largest shareholder, Farmer Business Development, on the joint venture. And as a result, it is a related party transaction, but we believe it delivers on the strategic imperatives that we set out to deliver on, which we and others can focus on our core underwriting business. It reduces any possibility or reduces the exposure that we have to any possible fluctuations in property values. In the future, our operating profit will only reflect the core business. It has reduced the debt on the group balance sheet, and it has also reduced the guarantees that FPD Holdings have given over debt. And the property and leisure business we have that have performed so well and have been so resilient, it enhances further their ability to realise value over time. And in conclusion, it enhances our EPS marginally, and it does have a small short-term NAV increase. So just in summary, we're very happy with our results, and we believe they're excellent, and we're also very happy to have taken a significant strategic step. And as a result, we recommend that shareholders vote in favour of the resolution at an upcoming EGM. So that concludes our presentation, and I think, Colin, we're going to open it now to questions from people in the room for a few minutes.
Yep, people in the room first.
Yeah, just in terms of the transaction, I mean, would it have any impact now on your Solvency II adequacy, and just in terms of Solvency II itself, is there any particular benchmarks on the regulatory side that we'll see being announced in the company with regard to the progress towards meeting the solvency requirement? And then just separately there, and just on the Quinn Group's impact on the market at this stage, is there a flow through in terms of your agri side? Is there any benefit coming through because of the difficulties at Quinn at the moment?
Okay, to answer those in terms, Kevin, first of all, the insurance company has always been totally separate than our property and leisure venture. So the insurance company balance sheet from a regulatory point of view and a corporate point of view is totally isolated from our other businesses. So the transactions that we're proposing here won't have any impact on the insurance balance sheet one way or another. In terms of Solvency II, I think we announced at the half year that at the preliminary results time in March that we had carried out QIS 5, Quantitative Impact Assessment 5 or Study 5, and we are comfortable that we are already in a position to meet the capital requirements under Solvency II. Nothing has changed in the meantime. It's something that we assess on a quarterly basis, but nothing has changed in our assessment of that. If anything, the likelihood is that Solvency II might be pushed out another year in terms of capital requirement now. So where it had been envisaged that it would be the first 2013, I think that's been pushed out for a further year, or it potentially will be. But we are very comfortable that as currently envisaged and all our plans going forward, we will be able to, we will be comfortably meeting this any Solvency II standard. In terms of fallout from Quinn, has there been a flow through to our agri business? Not particularly, I think, Kevin, because Quinn never made any inroads. He did offer farm insurance for a short period, but it's not something that they ever gained any traction in. So there might be a small trickle back of some of those customers, but they never took enough customers, I guess, in the first place. So really, when you look at Quinn in terms of the markets that they were operating in, whether that be at the large commercial end or whether it be at the young driver higher risk end, they're not markets that we would have been very active in. So there hasn't been a huge flow through from that.
So just coming back to the first point then, so in other words, the equity holding in the joint venture company, obviously sitting in the holding company, completely isolated from the impact that you'll have in the general underwriting business.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's no connection between any of it at all whatsoever, and if you like, there are no guarantees or no the insurance of assessment whatsoever.
Medium term loss ratio, target loss ratio, should we be thinking closer to 83 or 68?
I think 68. I think closer to 68, even though I think to deliver a long term loss ratio of 68 is probably quite ambitious, but it'll be at that or a little bit above that. The 83 that we had last year would have included a lot of the bad weather in January 2010. So a normalised combined ratio target that we have, and we have to reflect that as investment returns are going to be lower the longer, that as a consequence, that combined ratio probably has to be stronger than it would otherwise be, and our combined ratio target over the long term will be close to 94-95%, will be something that we'd be very happy with.
Just on the joint venture that you've announced, can you maybe talk to us a little bit about whether you considered alternative options, and then in the end why you did go for this particular option? For example, a complete disposal.
Okay. Well, I guess we looked at all options, and we believed that it was in the best interest of all of our shareholders that we do something which didn't involve any, because of the way property and property and banking markets are, that we didn't look at doing anything in the short term, because we believed that would have a damaging effect for all shareholders. So we believe that obviously our primary driver was to make sure that we are our focus is more and more on insurance underwriting, and we believe what the current transaction does is it achieves that, but it also gives the property and leisure businesses a chance to make sure that they realise their full value, and the shareholders will get something for that.
Regarding the transaction, are there any fees attached to it in the current year?
There will be.
There certainly are fees, and when I've given the estimated impact action on the NAV, the P&L will have a net item that's likely to be 3 positive. Okay? Be some wording like profit on deal discount.
Yeah. You mentioned the investment fluctuations, the FX impact. What's the actual about that?
Sorry, Stephen.
$5.6 million investment fluctuations. What's that?
Probably around 2 part, is it?
Yeah, I think it's close.
Yeah, and that's obviously reversed a little bit since year end.
Just on your gross written premium, so when you look to year to year, you're down 3%, but actually when you look to the half year, you look at the second half 2010 to first half, it's actually up 1.7. Is that a seasonal factor? Or are you seeing that there is, on the market is showing for declines, which we constant that you might see increase over the year or a bit better?
I think it would be too optimistic to look for an increase over the year, but certainly there's an element of what you're talking about. Firstly, there is a bit of seasonality, and a lot of large corporates would have their insurance policy renewed on the 1st of January. And so therefore, we'd always expect the first half to be a little bit better than the second half in gross written premium, earned at all levels out, okay? But at a written level, okay? And then secondly, I suppose, yes, we've seen a recent improvement in the trend, okay, and therefore we would not expect to be down as much in half two as in half one, but it would be too optimistic to have to suggest that either the second half or the full year will be positive rather than negative.
If we think a negative, but not as negative.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and again, Oliver, a lot of that will depend on how other people react. I mean, we do have opportunities to grow, and you know, if people in those sectors are hugely aggressive, we will pull back a little bit. But if the pricing there is more fits into the sweet spot that we would like, we have potential to grow. You know, so it depends a little bit on what competitive activity is like. But certainly, the way we see it at the moment, we will be looking. I think it would be ambitious to say that our GWP will grow, and perhaps if there is potential for it to do so by the end of the year, but only if no market conditions allow it. But I think certainly our feeling at the moment is it probably will be lower than last year, but it should be better than the half year, I think. But it does depend on competitive factors.
This comes from confidence
that you're now taking on more risk. Previously you gave a number beyond which you pass off, you reinsure.
What's the
threshold for being difficult by
the second half of the
year? Okay, again, Stephen, a reinsurance program, it's different. There's two levels. It depends on is it a property risk or is it a motor liability risk. Okay, and our motor liability risk has remained reasonably unchanged. So we have an excessive loss treaty, which means that we will take the first $2 million of any event, and above that it's all passed off to reinsurers, and that's remained the same. But the bulk of where our reinsurance outward premium is in terms of our property insurance. So previously, we only retained the first 200. It's a proportional treaty as well, so this is it's a little bit complex, but the maximum retention we had on any property risk, so if it was a house worth 250 grand, our maximum retention was 250 grand. But if it was a business premise worth 10 million, our maximum retention was still 250 grand. So the way that works is, the simplest example is if you have a property, say, worth $500,000, we would take half, we take in all the premium, then we give half to the insurers, and any claim that arises on that property, no matter how small it is, or if it's a total loss, he takes half and we take half. Now, we've increased that 250 to 300, and as Carl referred to, the reason for doing that is we decided to take more risk at that operational level, but as well as that, we increase our the amount by which we're protected for a major catastrophe, you know, at the higher end. So in any sense, our events now, we are protected, I think, probably up to 150 million, where that was 110 million before. So above our retention, we're protecting ourselves more at that end, but we're taking more of the working layer risk.
So, and to the final piece of your question, the second piece is, where did the catastrophe start? You're probably thinking of a previous number we gave you of 5 million. In other words, we take the first 5 million of a catastrophe, okay, and then it's going over to the insurers. That remains the same. We have not changed that.
So the result of that, Stephen, is that we give less premium away, okay, and because that's only worked its way through earnings in the first half of the year, because the reinsurance treaty is the first to the 31st of the 12th, that will become more, that will have a bigger impact as we go, you know, that will need to feed through further as the years go on, but so that's why our net earned premium is flat while our gross written was down. Okay, well, I guess farmer business development, they are obviously keen that their shareholders will also get a chance to approve this transaction. Now, they will be sending out, as I understand, and we only signed this transaction last night, so they will be sending out a circular in due course, and they will have it as an ordinary resolution in an EGM. But I think they have about 4,000 shareholders who are either the original shareholders in SPD or antecedents of the original shareholders, and they don't have any large shareholding blocks per se.
And you know, they have to have like 75%.
My understanding is that they will be looking for an ordinary resolution, so it'll be 50%.
Just on the balance sheet, just on the insurance side, the government bonds at the moment, what's the maturity, the average maturity?
Very short, it's less than a year, it's about 9 months. And I guess at the moment, that obviously has impact in terms of what the underlying yield is on, but we believe at the moment that it's appropriate to be short. To give us more flexibility, though.
Your competitors, are they pricing for a similar balance sheet, or
Well, I think they must be, to be honest with you. And you know, we have carried out an analysis. It's very hard to get an up-to-date analysis on our competitors in the Irish market, but if you look at comparable UK insurers, you can see that many of them are in that space at the moment as well.
If we can look at a group of a half dozen of the major PLC insurers, and we can see that the average term of all their assets, their general insurance assets, has reduced very significantly over the last number of years. So I can't say that they're all equal to us, but they're certainly the direction and trend is the same.
And I guess that the return, Kent, he looks from pricing is more of a long-term phenomenon, wouldn't that be? Just because if interest rates were zero, you wouldn't say, well, price have to go up by a huge amount. It's really the long-term trend, what you believe that means in terms of your return on capital, through the cycle.
What are you seeing in terms of pricing pressure from the competitive landscape in Ireland?
In general insurance?
Yeah.
We have seen the pricing pressure certainly has eased somewhat. I mean, the pricing has been very, very aggressive in the Irish market for a number of years, and that meant that the combined operating ratio at a market level had been 105% for car, I think, in 2008, and 108% in 2009. So that means insurers were losing money. So we'd begun to put up rates back in 2008, and we'd begun to put them up gradually. Others didn't do so till a bit later, and you could see that resulted in those negative combined ratios for them. But then you can see there's a chart there which shows the CPI, which is the best indicator we have, which shows rates going up on car and home insurance. I think that's on one of our slides there, Carl, on the top right-hand side of slide 15. So you can see that rates did go up, and they went up quite sharply. Now, the benefit of those was lost somewhat because values insured went down, but how we see it ourselves is, as I said, our conversion rates and our lapse rate have improved, which means pricing in the marketplace is firming. How that develops into the second half of the year remains to be seen, but certainly pricing it has firmed, and that is how our policy, but we've been able to be in a position to allow our policy volume grow marginally over the period, as opposed to...
I interpret the higher advertising costs and that kind of trade.
Well, I guess it's a different blend of competition, I suppose. You can compete by being very aggressive on price, you can compete by spending a lot of money on advertising, so it's a different...
My concern, as you said, it's a prelude to pricing pressure.
Yeah, and certainly to date there is no evidence of that. If anything, Carl, sorry, pricing the market is probably more rational than it has been for some time.
Target payout ratio?
Our target payout ratio is between 40% and 50%. Okay, so I guess if you look at the two slides there, Brian, one showing net asset value per share and one showing our dividend, and I guess you have to link the two of them somewhat. At the moment, we are well below, that is our target ratio, and we leave ourselves a range of between 20 and 50%, which we will allow at different points in the economic and insurance cycles. And there's no doubt we are at the lower end of that range at the moment, and the reason we are is because we want to, and we are committed to a sustainable, progressive dividend. And I guess you can see in terms of what our balance sheet has come through, our net asset value has reduced, and now we're very happy to see our net assets beginning to move up again, and we're confident that we'll be able to move up through that payout range. But we are at the lower end of it at the moment.
And payout ratio is something we'd look at on an annual basis rather than...
Yeah.
What's the target ratio
The internal target we have is about 55%. Okay? Target doesn't mean... We have to declare dividends so as to get down there, or we can't declare dividends so as to get up there, okay? And we certainly spent it in half when we had a solvency ratio of 60%. I'm saying, no, we can still do the dividends, but just prioritise getting it back up to 50%. And so therefore, the fact that we're at 60 and the target of 65 means we're very comfortable, probably. It doesn't mean that we're forced to declare more dividends.
Target for investing in equities or do you have a limit?
We have an upper limit, and that upper limit would have been, and again, we don't so much look at equities on their own, but we look at real assets in total. And in the long term, we'd be looking at, and again, it all depends on where your solvency ratio is, because that defines how much risk you can take. And we'd be looking at a split between real assets, i.e. equities and properties, of about 15% of our underwriting assets, and then cash and gilts of about 85%. Now we're a good bit away from that, but and
over time, I guess, and as opportunity allows, we see us getting to a situation where real assets will probably only be in equity. So I guess 15% of our assets is ideally the long-term shape if we're happy with the outlook for equities and the outlook for the world, and we're also happy in terms of our own solvency position, etc. That's the target allocation that we've been moving towards over time. And we probably had planned to be there. We planned to be further there. If you'd asked us to start the year, we'd probably plan to be further there now than we are, and that is because we stopped moving up that chain sometime in May when we began to get a little bit uneasy. Okay, Carl, do you want to see if anyone on the telephone want to?
Okay.
Thank you. If you have a question from the telephone, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. We've no questions from the telephone at this time, gentlemen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.